You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
So we're past the 24-hour point, right, Josh? Like, we can't really talk that much about
Bills-Houston. I don't know why, but it doesn't feel like it.
No, it doesn't. yesterday was a day. But there are points, I think, in yesterday's game. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I think there are points in yesterday's game, or not yesterday's game, Sunday's game, that will be talking points for the rest of the season. Whether it be clock management at the end, across the board, from D'Amico Ryans and Sean McDermott. The Bills' inability to pass the ball the moment Khalil Shakir is not 100%. You look back at the Baltimore game. The moment he gets that ankle injury, yes, there was the broken play to him, but ultimately it fell apart pretty quickly. And for this to kind of been, regardless if it was the Bills' immediate plan or kind of like their plan B, C, D, whatever, it's the plan they walked into the season with. I was somebody that gave it a lot of patience. I was kind of excited for it. I thought this is where the NFL was going, where you wanted to spread the ball around more, just have a bunch of solid dudes who could get open and catch the ball. And that's been the one key issue up to this point. Even in the three games they won, really outside of Jacksonville, guys are not getting open nearly enough outside of Shakir. And man, Josh, when it's bad, it's awful. It's nearly unwatchable football. And that's what they were on Sunday against Houston. A defense that is not particularly good. It's not like this is the Jets defense, which they're going up against this weekend, or this Monday. And a team that, Helen, I don't think has ever particularly played well against. I mean, there's been good Jets games. I'm being facetious when I say that. But like in recent years, those have been the games, even when they have Zach Wilson playing at quarterback, he's not particularly good. And now, I don't know, Josh. I mean, a part of me is now just sitting here going like, all right, rev up the engines on the wide receiver train. We're doing this again for like the fifth year in a row. Because they don't have dudes. They're paying $8 million a year to a guy in Curtis Samuel who is doing nothing. I mean, nothing. Yeah. His stats this year, I wrote them down just real quick. His stats this year. 9 catches, 48 yards. We're through 5 games. 9 catches for 48 yards. We're through 5 games.
You know what he had last year through 4 games?
What?
Where'd it go? I had it written down. Oh, no.
Wait, we're through 5 games.
Well, through okay.
Going into the Sunday.
Right. Yeah. I guess I didn't write him down. I did that for Mac Hollins and MVS. I came prepared. I have notes. I have written
them
down.
That's what you've been writing down here for the last few minutes.
Well, I'm just tweeting it out now. Some free agency numbers for Bills offensive players since 2021. It's not been good. Surprise, it's not been good. I did write it down. I just saw it. Through 4 games last year, because this is what I based it off of. I based it off 4 games this year, 4 games last year. He was 17 for 20 in terms of catches and targets. 178 yards, 3 rushes for 20 yards, and 1 rushing touchdown. No passing, no receiving touchdowns. So, again, like you said, to compare it to this year, that's a vast difference.
They have no plan. They have no plan for him.
And it's glaringly obvious every single time he is targeted or gets the ball.
It's a bubble screen.
If the pass is completed, he gets maybe a yard.
Maybe.
Or he gets blown up in the backfield.
Oh, yeah, because Duncan Cade. Blocking, man.
Forget about tight end university. Go to blocking university.
Oh, man. And that's the thing is, watching the Chiefs game last night might be the perfect example for this. The Chiefs have also, I have said, been a really bad team at identifying the wide receiver position post Tyreek Hill.
Right.
They've tried a lot. They have not been particularly good at it.
To be fair, when they got Kadarius Toney, he did. Or are you talking in the draft or just overall?
Really anything.
Okay, well, to be fair, when they got to Kadarius Toney at the trade, or near the trade deadline last year, he was useful.
He had a useful game. There was a game where he popped off. I think
game.
We give the Chiefs the benefit of the doubt a lot when mm-hmm. they make these trades, like, because you'll see it all over Twitter. How could we let them get this guy? How could the NFL let them get this guy and that guy?
Before he got hurt, Rashee Rice was looking good.
No, Rashee Rice, I think they've nailed that pick.
He was on his way, and obviously there's all the off-field stuff and now the injury, so you don't know what's happening there.
In terms of talent, they've nailed that pick.
Right, but you're exactly right. Like, everything else, Sky Moore, where's he? You know, what's he doing? He's just kind of
It is fun
out.
Whenever he's on the field.
Right, yeah, for sure.
It just feels wrong.
Yeah, but it still feels so different when you look at what the Chiefs have done and how they still look as a team mm-hmm. compared to what the Bills have done and how they look as a team.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, yes, in terms of talent acquisition for guys they didn't have, it's not been great. But, sure, there's been a few that have worked out. Tyreek Hill, Rashee Rice is starting to, and you look on the Bills side. Stephon Diggs obviously was great. But other than that, what have the Bills done in terms of adding talent?
Yeah, that's a frustrating bit for me there, too, because like, I don't agree with people when they say like the Bills have never valued wide receiver. That's just factually incorrect. They did trade a first-round pick for Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm.
That first-round pick ended up becoming Justin Jefferson. Yeah. But I thought so, but I couldn't remember.
At the time, it was you needed an immediate addition. You clearly needed a one, because mm-hmm. in 2019, you had added Cole Beasley and John Brown, which worked very, very well for the Bills. You drafted Gabe Davis. My problem has been, I feel like the Bills have stopped really caring about that position after that 18-month window.
Yeah.
From 2019, that offseason of 2019, into the offseason of 2020. They stopped seemingly caring about it, because that was always my biggest issue with kind of the Diggs era. It has never been Diggs' personality. Mm-hmm. Top-tier wide receivers are always divas if you base it off of what, you know, a fan's definition of that is. Some are way worse. I mean, George Pickens basically doesn't run routes for the Pittsburgh Steelers anymore when he does not get the ball. It's really bad. And then you have other guys like Marvin Harrison. From what I remember, when he was with the Colts, he was very quiet. Didn't really say too much except on the field.
I was just saying, what?
But that's really and I could be wrong on that, but that's how I've always remembered it, especially during that era with like T.O. and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Chad Ochocinco.
The biggest problem with the Bills, though, was that they did not have a second option pass takes. They tried mm-hmm. Gabe Davis far too many years. And now you're seeing the problems here with the Bills of just they've let the cupboard get dry, and now they're still discount shopping.
Right. Well, and that brings me to all the research I did yesterday. So I've been looking at all of the Bills' offensive free agents that they have added, whether it be from outside the organization or guys that weren't signed right away, and then after free agency started, they circled back mm-hmm. and signed them. I started at the 2021 offseason, because mm-hmm. that is the first offseason of no John Brown and no Cole Beasley.
Yep.
Both of them are gone at that point. They don't come back, I don't think, unless Beasley came back at the end of the 2020. No, right?
They both make returns that are very...
Right, but it's not in the sense
we're in desperation.
Yes, right. So, if you're looking at 2022, they re-sign Isaiah McKenzie. He plays one season with the Bills, has decent numbers.
But that's when he's the slot receiver.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's when he's trying to be the Cole Beasley replacement. But like I said, he doesn't come back with the Bills. He's released in the offseason. They sign O.J. Howard, who never plays a snap for the Bills. Never. Not once. Cool. Great. Jameson Crowder, signing that offseason, goes to IR in week 5. Can't really do much about that, but, you know, poor luck of the draw there. And Tywan Jones, a running back, re-signs with the Bills, mm-hmm. only plays special team minutes in the entire season. 2022 offseason, Damian Harris, Trent Sherfield, Deonte Hardy, that whole thing didn't work out.
Yeah, we kind of know where all of that went, which is nowhere.
Right, and now, obviously, we're in the first full offseason of Joe Brady, and we get Curtis Samuel, Mac Hollins, Quentin Morris, if you want to look at that, because mm-hmm. he was offensive re-signing, and MVS, and Ty Johnson. Sorry, forgot mm-hmm. about him. Through all of that, over the last 4 years, your wide receivers, which consist of 7 players that have played meaningful snaps for the Bills, have 839 receiving yards and 7 touchdowns. The tight ends, not that you've needed them to, have done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And the running backs, really there's only 2 of them, Ty Johnson and Damian Harris, have two touchdowns and 121 rushing yards on 30 attempts. And granted, they were more in a backup role, and Damien Harris did get hurt.
Yeah.
But overall, that's your offense past Allen and Diggs for the last 4 years.
Yep. It's been
and you let Gabe Davis go, who was inconsistent as he was.
Well, yeah, and yeah, he's not lighting up for Jacksonville.
Right, exactly. And also, another point on all this, none of the players that I listed off there played with the Bills past one season, even the ones on multi-year contracts. And again, we're still in this season now, so we don't know what that's going to lead to. But it's just so jarring to me that you have seven players, and some of them were supposed to be in wide receiver three or even wide receiver two conversations. Mm-hmm. And like Deonte Hardy, for example, he had 15 catches as a Bill for 150 yards and one touchdown in 16 games played.
Yeah. I mean, what, never got off the ground.
What is that? And you can even look at Trent Sherfield, who the Bills get him and the Dolphins are freaking out. Like, oh my God, we just lost this great player. Sherfield plays every game, has 86 yards and one freak touchdown.
Oh, in the Dolphins game, the final regular season of the game.
He's falling out of the end zone, but he keeps his feet in and he makes a crazy catch, which, sure, that's important. That was the game-winning touchdown. But at the same time, again, you're signing these players, expecting them to be something, and they're nothing.
Well, I mean, you
it's
even look at
it. It's not working out.
You look at even this year. I mean, yes, he's on a one-year deal, but like Mac Hollins.
Yeah.
I think most of us were kind of assuming, like, all right, he'll be like a wide receiver four role. He'll be here. And in the first few games, it kind of makes sense. Like, he's in just these little spot roles here and there. It's not too bad, what have you. And now all of a sudden, these last two games, dude, he has 12 targets and three catches. They are just doing whatever they can. We have some breaking news, actually.
Oh.
The New York Jets have fired Robert Saleh.
Whoa.
Okay, so that changes very much how we're doing the show. The Jets will not be playing the Robert Saleh Jets. I don't really know who's going to be their head coach.
Are we going to be playing the Aaron Rodgers Jets?
Effectively, yes.
I mean, man.
I do want to get back to this. The real misses the Bills have had on offense, specifically adding players, because you can even go to the draft. I mean, James Cook is a running back. You likely should want out after 4 years of that contract. Dalton Kincaid is a first-round pick, but a possession tight end. But, man, the Jets. All right, so Robert Saleh is out as head coach of the New York Jets. We've got ESPN on here. They're playing that. Adam Schefter has tweeted it out as well. He was informed just minutes ago, apparently. I'm not surprised. I am at the timing. The timing feels very sudden.
It does, yeah. I don't know how I feel about Robert Saleh as a coach, because he has dealt with so many just kind of bad situations, but he's also put himself in bad situations, I feel like. I mean, while yes, he is part of the decision-making group, at the same time,
it felt like he's not, though.
Right. It felt like he was just, hey, man, here's your new quarterback. His name is Aaron Rodgers, and he's 40 years old.
And he definitely has more power than you.
Yes.
Just be prepared for
that. He is actually the coach. You're just the figurehead.
And that's kind of how it has felt. So, like, again, that's why this is not too surprising. The timing is stunning.
Right. Then now you have the Jets. Well, the Bills going to the Jets next week. For the Jets, the season is almost effectively over. But if the Jets somehow win on Monday night next week, that's a big shot in the arm for them, at least for morale.
Well, I guess that's my thing, too. It's, you know, I'm saying this is, you know, maybe on the Jets side of things. You've beaten the Bills in far worse circumstances.
Right. With Zach Wilson coming in recently, for an injured Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, recently.
Yeah.
So, like, let's not act like you couldn't right the ship here. I guess that also tells you, I mean, he's 20 for 36 in his few years here as Jets head coach, but
well, but I mean, also, like, again, look what he had to deal with. He had Zach Wilson, who, while, yes, he looked like a decent prospect, he was never the guy coming out of college.
Yeah,
it was always a head scratcher of a pick. Again,
yeah,
you have to wonder what he had to say in terms of, you know, the input there.
Yeah, I do wonder how much power Saleh has ever had
in
New York.
It just, I don't know. Again, I don't know how to feel about it, because I don't feel like we've gotten a full look at what he can be as a head coach. He obviously comes from the Kyle Shanahan tree, coming from San Francisco, which you know, that's proven to be a good place to come from. But I wonder if he was in the wrong situation in New York. I don't really know what New York's situation.
Which, like, it's probably true for most head coaches.
Right. I was going to say, what's New York's solution here? I mean, Nathaniel Hackett's their offensive coordinator, and that's Aaron Rodgers' best friend.
Who's going to be their interim? I assume that's going to be Nathaniel Hackett.
Again,
which
it's going to be the
dreadful
Aaron Rodgers Jets.
Oh, man.
Because it's Nathaniel Hackett and Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, man.
It works so great in Green Bay.
Let's
have it again in New York. It's not going to be the same solution.
He's been horrendous.
Is this a precursor to a Davante Adams trade? Is this a Adams will only come here if Saleh is not the head coach?
No.
But think about it. He worked with Nathaniel Hackett.
I think this is coming from Rodgers saying he's going to lose his mind if Saleh
is
still the coach.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't think Adams plays a part in this at all. I think this is all Rodgers going, I won't play for Saleh anymore. And so
I think we kind of saw that, you know, with whatever happened.
So it's going to be Jeff Ulbrich.
Huh?
I do not know who that is.
Interesting.
That's coming from Peter Schrager.
I look at, you've got to put yourself.
Defense coordinator. Their defense coordinator is going to be their interim head coach.
Oh, he's the guy from with the beard from Hard Knocks.
Bingo, yep.
Yeah, he was kind of a nice character. He was fun. He was a little, he was like your typical defensive head coach. Again, but why are they focusing defense here? Sure, their defense is great, but their offense is abysmal. Why wouldn't you try to get an offensive mind in charge?
I think every team kind of has that contingency plan of who would be your interim.
Yeah, okay.
That's fair. Teams will have the assistant head coach that'll be your interim guy.
To go back to the whole Nathaniel Hackett thing, you have to put yourself in the mindset of Aaron Rodgers, which it's hard to do because there's some interesting decisions in there. But think about this. If this is really coming from him, and if he really wants Davante Adams to play with him, who does he want as part of the group, the leadership group, or the immediate leadership group, when Adams comes here? It's Nathaniel Hackett. They worked well together in Green Bay. He won back-to-back MVPs with Hackett. And I'm not saying it's going to work again in New York, but if you're Rodgers, that could be a line of thinking of, hey, if I get this guy out of here, maybe, just maybe, my guy can become the head coach, which we know he's not now.
Yeah.
But
it is so funny, though, how this was so clear that you could see a blow-up was coming for the Jets.
I just didn't expect it to be that.
No, I mean, I kind of expected to be this fast. I just, again, I didn't assume they'd fire Robert Saleh. I thought it would just be, you'd see for 3 or 4 weeks, just the absolute Jets circus that it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And instead now it's Saleh gets fired. I don't know the lines yet. I don't even want to say probably, but there's a good chance they lose Monday night. Bills go to 4-2. They go to 2-4.
Mm-hmm.
And their season's lost again. Rodgers is already getting beat up regularly. That O-line is still not good. He's leaving games limping almost every time now.
He was crawling across the field like a video game character.
We're talking about injuries he picks up every game.
Yeah.
It's super... I don't want to say interesting. No, it's just it is super Jets of them.
It's expected.
It is super expected of them to do this.
The only thing that's unexpected is the timing.
Yeah, the timing is a little off.
And honestly, too, where does Saleh go from here?
Back to being a DC. He was great.
Right.
He was a great defense coordinator.
Where do you think? I mean, because I'm looking at other teams.
I mean, I'm fairly certain Minnesota's going to lose Brian Flores.
Ooh, yeah.
So that might be a good one of all right, you kind of get somebody in that same mold.
Brian Flores goes to New York. Robert Saleh goes to Minnesota.
Let's do it.
Who says no?
Let's do it. But I think that's the thing is he's likely going to go back to a defensive coordinator. I think you are right. We really didn't get to see what he could be as a head coach.
And I think we will again. He's young. I think there's a chance
he's
that you're
going to
see him as a head coach again with some other team in a better situation or a different situation.
I do wonder, though, how much the NFL is going to hold it against him of just it felt like for 2 years you were basically just a figurehead. That two of your...
It was, hey, that guy coaches the New York Jets.
Ultimately, it was 3 years and some change. This is into his fourth year as head coach. So,
I look at the teams around the league and teams that could use a new head coach soon, and there's a fair chunk there.
Yeah.
I mean, Sean McVay for years has talked about how he wants to retire.
I was going to say, every year we got
every
have,
year it sounds like he's going to retire. So, do the Rams want to go in a new direction if Stafford also retires? I mean, that's a spot. I would be,
the Rams ever hiring a defensive-minded person, which surprised me.
Yeah, right.
Because of the success they have, still. Because of the brand they've sort of built. Like, mm-hmm. they're kind of like that in the Pittsburgh Steelers mold or the Chicago Bears mold.
What about the Cowboys?
No, that feels like Bill Belichick. That just kind of feels like it's going to be Bill Belichick. Like, we're all waiting for Mike McCarthy to get fired, but, like, it's going to be Bill Belichick.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
Comes full circle. Belichick goes back to the Jets.
Oh. I'd hate everything about that. I'd hate everything about
that. That would be such
that.
Another Jets move. It'd be so bad for the Jets. Do it.
I don't even necessarily know if it'd be bad for the Jets. No, like, I still think Bill Belichick is a good coach. I do think, for the most part, the game has somewhat passed him by.
Yeah, and he would go in there and try to make some stupid pick again, like Cole Strange in the first round.
The key is when you hire him, and I think he's learned that after one offseason of basically no one even wanted to interview him, he will not be the GM of this team. Someone else will be doing that.
Have you seen some of the storytelling from the Aaron Hernandez show?
I've seen
with
clips.
Belichick.
I've seen clips.
Where they're drafting him and Belichick's just like, yeah, we should just do it. The value's great. And Robert Kraft's like, yeah, value.
I've seen clips. we've got to stop. Who is your audience is sports people. It is not the true crime people. It is sports people.
It's coming off as a true crime podcast, but because of the way the story went. But back to the Jets though. Mm-hmm. I think this is only I want to say this is negative for the Jets, but I also don't know. Because
I think it was very much expected, so yeah. I'm not surprised. Again, the only surprising thing for me is the timing.
Right. But and honestly, too, if you think about it, the day the Jets got Aaron Rodgers, this was going to happen. I think that this was inevitable as soon as the Jets...
Unless it worked.
Well, yeah.
Unless like they got... Like,
it
last
didn't
year,
feel like it was ever going to work. Off the bat, even in training camp, it did not feel like there was a mold there. It didn't feel like it was chemistry.
You could argue, too, that this was maybe a year in the making in that sense, too, because Saleh felt like already was on the hot seat when they went and got Rodgers. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't get hurt last year and we're just seeing all of their issues this year, a year early... Maybe they don't fire him going into week six.
Right, but you fire him at the end of the year.
But you probably fire him at the end of the year. Like, it was almost a saving grace for him and Joe Douglas.
And then that puts them in the running to get who? I mean, there was...
Well, Ben Johnson and Bobby Sloak, neither of them leave their teams.
Right, but do one of them leave to go coach...
A 40-year-old quarterback?
Garrett Wilson.
But a 40-year-old... Who cares?
Right, but you're there...
You need the quarterback.
You're there and saying, hey, Aaron, yeah, great to have you. See you never, because... He's going to play the end of the year, and then he's going to be done.
Yeah, you need a quarterback. That job is one of the least attractive in sports.
No, but think about it. If it was the end of last season,
mm-hmm.
and you were a prospective coach heading into New York, you have to deal with 1 year of Rodgers, and then the team is yours.
I maybe have to deal with 1 year of Rodgers.
You think he's going to be back?
He could pull a Brady and just decide I'm going to keep coming back. I now can't draft his replacement without that being a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're one of the least attractive sports organizations right now in sports.
It does depend on what Rodgers does. If Rodgers retires at the end of the year, they have a good chance at a clean slate. But at the same time, we've seen them have a clean slate before, mm-hmm. and they've messed it up multiple times.
Connor Hughes, Jets reporter for SNY, he's saying sources confirm that Jets have fired Robert Saleh. I touched base with several sources over the last few minutes. Sentiment shared by all. Stunned. They did not see this coming. It's good. It's good. I like that. Fair Jets move with them. 803-0550 is the number to call. Do want to jump back on this Bills point, the misses in free agency, namely, of course, on the offense, but really the big news of today and going to be for the rest of the week with the Bills heading down to New Jersey to take on the Jets for Monday night.
It is in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget that.
The Jets have fired head coach Robert Saleh just 5 games into his 4th year as head coach. They are elevating their defense coordinator, Jeff Ulbrich, to serve as interim. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Again, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. This is WGR.
The defense, first of all, the defense was obviously good, yeah. but there were times where we saw they were struggling a little bit, and then Robert Saleh seemed to have no control over the team itself. The offense was being run by Aaron Rodgers. You had Nathaniel Hackett there. You heard opposing coaches. You heard people on iNetwork and various other stations and radio and beyond. Everybody that knows anything about football was talking about how pedestrian the Jets were, particularly offensively, how they were bereft are the kind of leadership that you need in order for this team to be what their potential was for them to be. And then you saw the relationship with him and Aaron Rodgers on.
Stephen A. Smith of ESPN giving his thoughts there on the very recent firing of Jets head coach Robert Saleh. Jeff Ulbrich, their defense coordinator, will serve as interim head coach. Saleh, 20-36 in just over 4 years as head coach, was into his fourth year as head coach. I don't find this to be a surprising firing, only the timing of it surprising. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Kia, or excuse me, we are going to get now connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We've got Frank here online. He's been holding for quite a while. Frank, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, good. How are you?
Doing very well.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you.
Okay, thanks. Just wanted to compare a couple things. I'm a long-time Denver Broncos fan. I love the Bills. I grew up in Wyoming. Huge Josh Allen fan. I see a lot of similarity of the organization and the fan base and the media coddling McDermott. You guys aren't, I mean, from my perspective, Broncos did the same thing with Mike Shanahan after he won the Super Bowls and he hung around and he just couldn't get the job done anymore because Elway retired. And Shanahan won Super Bowls. He was good offensive mind, but he won the Super Bowls because of Elway. Same reason Belichick won Super Bowls is because of Brady. Belichick and Shanahan were great coaches in their own respect. But McDermott isn't in their boat. You have a once-in-a-generational talent in Allen. And for the fan base and the media in Buffalo to expect different results from McDermott, it's just not going to happen. I mean, I'm not attacking McDermott personally, but he's just not going to get the job done. And it's unfortunate. There'll always be a good team with Josh Allen. I think Allen is probably hurt a lot worse than you realize. And I'm not making any judgments about the personnel on the team. That's up to you guys. You know that situation better. But I think for the fan base to continue to make excuses for McDermott, it's just not going to lead to anything good. And that's very unfortunate for a lot of entities. The Bronco fan base did the same thing with Shanahan. And they eventually parted ways, and Shanahan went to Washington. It was very unsuccessful there. So I don't think McDermott, the only reason McDermott's winning games is because of Josh Allen. You're not winning games because of Sean McDermott. And this idea of complementary football, I mean, tell that to Tom Brady. Brady threw the ball when he wanted to and when McDaniels wanted to, not when Belichick wanted to. And so that's my perspective, and I wish the Bills the best. I was heartbroken the other day when they lost at Houston, and quite frankly, that is as unforgivable as the 13 seconds. That's my piece. I wish you guys the best.
Yeah, Frank, thanks for the call. I don't really think many of the fans are actually giving McDermott much of a pass or anything. I think that's one of the more critical fan bases of a head coach in the sport. I will say on the Shanahan stuff, it ultimately did take him missing the playoffs 3 years in a row after winning two Super Bowls to eventually get fired. Mm-hmm. Now, to your point, though, that was after Elway, you know, retired, and they eventually became much more of a team that was, you know, 10-6, 9-7, 11-5, what have you. I don't want to give too much credit to McDermott because I really am still quite dumbfounded at the end of the Houston game. And yeah, for the fact of the matter is, like, they fumble a lot of these close, big time decisions. They do.
Well, it's
and we're in year eight, with McDermott.
Yeah, but
he made the playoffs his first year with the Bills and a rebuilding year with Tyrod Taylor. Mm-hmm. Some of it was due to turnover luck and such. That was not a very talented team. Don't get me wrong; they were in somewhat of a rebuilding. But he did make the playoffs, and he routinely puts up a very good defense that gets hurt a lot. Don't get me wrong. I heard Jeremy and Joe talking about it a lot this morning, and I know a lot of the rest of our hosts have kind of talked about it. I have a tough time talking about McDermott getting fired because I honestly don't feel it to be a realistic topic.
What do you mean? In the sense of, like, it won't happen, or?
Not right now, no.
Oh, well, yeah.
And not even really at the end of this year. Like I just said, Mike Shanahan, who won two Super Bowls, had to miss the playoffs three straight years. Andy Reid is maybe the perfect example for McDermott of many people defending don't fire him because Reid was this guy for years, just on the offensive side of the ball. It also took him missing the playoffs, like, I think 2 years in a row, but not winning a playoff game for like five.
I think something that along also, those
lines. Like it, for me, I understand it, and to a certain point, I very much agree with it. I also just, I think we're just screaming into a black hole.
Part of it, though, I think depends on who the owner is and what the time of the NFL is. Because if you look at all those, it's drastically different time periods in the league. And if the owner, in this case, Terry Pegula, or you can look at any team and say, look at that owner, look at Jerry Jones. He's a very demanding owner.
Mm-hmm.
How demanding is your owner in terms of success? If your team goes from a top three offense to middling of in the NFL.
What did Jeremy and Joe say today? They're 13th.
Yeah. And right four spots behind them is the New York Jets, an old friend, Brian Daboll. So I think that part of it depends on what you look at as successful. And another part of it also depends on where the NFL itself is and where your team is within that league. Because if you look at what the Bills have right now, it's a franchise, second best guy in the league, sometimes first best guy in the league, freak of nature quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
A defense that never quits, partially because of McDermott, and an offense that is sputtering because of organizational decisions. And I think that a big part of that is going to be what happens to the defense.
Yeah.
If the defense starts to take a nosedive, I don't think it's going to take missing the playoffs for 3 years. I don't think it's going to take missing the playoffs at all. If both of the... Because your division is good, is bad enough where you can make it to the playoffs because of Josh Allen. And I think that if it's a, you know, you're squeaking into the playoffs a couple years in a row and your defense is starting to sputter and your offense is still having issues, that's when you could see a firing even though the team made the playoffs. I really think that that would be...
I think it will take a lot. I know I will say, though, the temperature is turning up in terms of the national media.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know how much on ESPN they have, but I know Colin Cowherd has mentioned, I think on his own podcast and then his show as well, of like, it's time. And don't get me wrong. I am kind of at a point, too, where it may not even necessarily be firing, but just a different voice. We are in year eight. They have made a single AFC championship game. Mm-hmm. They have not made the Super Bowl.
They have lost
in the divisional round 3 years in a row.
This should no longer be the trust the process teams. This process is set.
Yeah, so
you have everything. Your quarterback is no longer Tyrod Taylor and Nathan Peterman. You have Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Go out and change the culture a little bit. You don't have to make a foundational change, but you have a good foundation. That's what you should build off of. And and you have this moment of, look what Josh Allen did for Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
And you can't, you have to seize that. You have to go out and get someone else that can be like him.
I just don't, it's, to me right now, it is just not realistic to expect it, to want it, to hope for it.
Well, no, I'm saying with this group, you have to try to do something like that. You have to take advantage of what you're given and adapt from being the team that had Tyrod Taylor to, hey, we have Josh Allen, the best quarterback in the league.
I mean, so then, we're talking about a head coach being fired on a Tuesday heading into Monday Night Football. Is that what you want then? Is McDermott gone?
No, I'm saying if you're not going to fire him, then change something. Have a conversation of, hey, look, what we have here is great, but we need to build on top of that. We can't just keep doing the same thing over and over again.
Oh, no, I don't think they are doing the same thing over and over again. I think they are changing it, and they've done it wrong. I think that's the thing. They have changed what they want to do right now.
You can't wait till the end of the offseason. I know it's a year in transition, quote unquote, but you can't wait this offseason because you have moments right now to go get players that can help you be better right now. Amari Cooper, Davante Adams, Adam Thielen, Deontay Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
There's names out there that can be acquired, and you've done it before. You went out and traded a first round pick for Stephon Diggs. It's got to get to this point where I get it. They tried something and it didn't work. But the past 3 years, they've done the same thing where they've tried something and it didn't work. Like I said, I read off all those free agents.
No.
They go out and get Deontay Hardy and Trent Sherfield last year. It didn't work. What did they do? They sat on it. They waited. And look what happened in the playoffs. Look what happened in the last half of that season. You went away from your number one wide receiver. And oh, look, now he wants to go. Now he wants to leave.
It wasn't necessarily that they went away from Diggs. I still think with that is Diggs saw the writing on the wall and goes, I don't like this. I don't like what they want.
Well, that's my point.
It was more, I don't like what my role is going to be. What my role is going to be is not going to be good enough here. It's going to be what it was last year, which was we all looked at Diggs and went, what the hell's going on? And then, you know, after that, yeah, I mean, they had Davis there, sure. They had Shakir, they had Kincaid. But, like, that's been my biggest issue is the guy they're spending $8 million a year on in Curtis Samuel and the guy they spent a first-round pick on in Dalton Kincaid aren't doing anything. I mean, Shakir's out. You need guys to make a play. And their decision was to throw the ball six times to Mac Hollins. a guy who I heard the Matt Harmon clip because I was sifting through that as well.
Yeah.
Who, after they missed him on third down, he's the gunner on the punt team.
Right.
And so that's – look, I do not think this was their plan A.
No.
I think it ultimately became that when they were getting a second-round pick for a 30-year-old wide receiver. But ultimately, it has failed. And I think they're also – I think it's still a little early to judge Joe Brady. But, man, it's 2 weeks in a row where I'm just sitting here dumbfounded at some of the decisions he makes as a play caller. And they missed with Dorsey as well because they love to keep the continuity. That, to me, is both the biggest positive and the biggest negative with the Bills.
Well, and that's what I was talking about, is you need to break that continuity. You need to be able to turn on a dime in season. When you can recognize that something's not working, make moves now that will help you not only for the rest of the year, but for future years to come.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying you have to fire a coordinator. I'm not saying you have to fire a head coach. I'm saying go out and make moves that make your team better. Or at least try to.
Well, I mean, they are trying. That's where I'm not totally getting.
What do you mean they're trying to? They're not. They made a trade.
I mean, they did last year for Rasul Douglas.
Right, but
we're in week five. We're still a month away from the trade deadline in a league that doesn't really like to trade in season. It's only a new sort of development that teams are willing to do so.
Right, but the iron's hot right now. You have to strike it.
The iron hot?
Devontae Adams. There's been all this chatter about what's going on. The Raiders want it done.
That's great that they want it done. No one's paying a second round pick and then paying his salary. No, that's the chatter now, is no one's doing that. So the Raiders, I mean, Pierce goes up to the podium and everyone's like, what happened with Damien? I don't know. You can ask Devontae. I don't know. We still want the second round pick. There is no iron is hot. There's nothing's happening.
I think in the sense of the iron is hot, I meant, you know, more so the Bills are in need for this and there are names out there to be had. And you kind of want to...
But are there names out there? Amari Cooper's not even on the trade deadline or in the trade block.
His contract looks like
sure,
he is.
Sure, absolutely. They're bad, but there has been no rumblings about Cleveland's fielding calls. They're ready to go. That team is operating like nothing is wrong. Deshaun Watson is still their quarterback.
Which is crazy.
So... is the iron actually hot? That's my thing. Is we throw out all these names. Is it actually happening? Adams, probably. I think he is going to get traded. I also think he's going to go to the Jets because they're desperate. They are a team. As we're seeing now, they're firing their head coach on a Tuesday before a Monday Night Football game when they're only 2-3. They're still okay. They're still alive. They don't look great, but they're still alive. That's a team that will trade a second-round pick and take on a bulk of the salary, even if they can't really afford it. They will work something out to do so. That is what bad football teams do. And I think a lot of people get locked into that. A lot of fans of, you need to make a move now. And it's like, slow down. Slow down. You make a hasty move, and now in 2 years you're like, oh, how could they do that? Now, well, there you go. That's what happens. So when these win-now moves don't work out, like statistically they won't, because one team out of 32 wins the Super Bowl every year, you're pissed. In 6 months, even though they did do something. The Bills did draft a receiver in this draft class. They did add guys. My frustration has been with the coaching. I think also the players, though. You know, Mac Hollins, track a deep ball, my guy. Please.
Yeah,
fight for the deep ball.
The way he looks back for that ball that he's wide open on, I don't think that was the Allen throw. We were texting when that happened. That's not Allen overthrowing him. That's Hollins' inability to find the ball. He looks... straight up. He doesn't turn and look back. He looks backwards over like his eyes were upside down looking at the ball. And it's like, that's elementary stuff.
But then even on the Josh points, we were talking about that. The Kincaid pass.
Yeah.
Dude, put some air under it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason a linebacker who's two steps behind Kincaid can make a play on that. Make the throw. You're in year seven. Learn to throw a deep ball. And so I think it's not all on the coaching. These players have to perform. Defensive players who are undrafted guys waiting for their time, they get in there, they're ready to go. Jamarcus Ingram was making two interceptions against the Dolphins. Cam Lewis looks like a great nickel corner. Now, at times, they're backups. It's going to happen that all of a sudden, yeah, you're a backup. I get it. But on Sunday, Dwayne Carter, baby, third-round rookie goes in there. He's ready to go. Offensive players... regularly. They're lost.
Keon Coleman got hit in the back of the head with a pass.
Yeah, the offense at times looks like they don't practice together. That's both, I think, on the players and the coordinator. But they're not an Amari Cooper away from being a really good offense. They're not, they're not a Devontae Adams away from being a really good offense.
But they are an Amari Cooper or Devontae Adams away from getting back to being a good offense, getting into the flow and getting that. Because I think part of it, too, is everyone is so tense about what's happening right now. And everyone's so you're playing tight. You're gripping the ball too tight. That's the problem right now is everyone gets so concerned. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't have that safety valve. Diggs was that safety valve. And Allen and Diggs, you could say. Mm-hmm. But now it's just Allen. And if you rely on just Allen, yes, he can provide you moments of greatness. But he also has shown the sugar high Josh stuff, where it's overthrowing a ball by 10 feet, underthrowing a ball by 10 feet and having it get picked off,
mm-hmm.
making a stupid run that could get himself hurt. There's so many different ways to go about this. And yes, I want to put it all on my franchise quarterback. But at the same time, you need to have someone on the end of the play that he can rely on too. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's the other problem is he doesn't rely on these guys yet because he's not familiar with them. Shakir is probably the only guy he's extremely familiar with and comfortable with making tough passes to because Shakir doesn't drop anything. But when he's out, what are you going to do?
Yeah, they look lost when he is not at 100%.
When a fifth-round wide receiver, mm-hmm. granted, he's very good,
yep.
when he's not in the offense, you just collapse?
Yep.
It's crazy.
803-0550 is the number to call. We'll get to your calls here after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, higher on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Let's get back to your calls as we go to Kevin here on the line. Kevin, how are we doing this morning?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Doing very well.
Really appreciate you guys taking my call. Wanted to see what your guys' thoughts on this. One thing I've noticed with Josh, and this is a couple years going, he seems to be really lazy with his play action pass. He kind of like throws his arm wildly, doesn't really sell the play action pass. And I remember hearing something about Peyton Manning years ago where it was like, if you look at his tape, like to the last frame, you don't know until he the last second. Just want to see how much you think that's a problem. Because like I said, I've seen it consistently and just want to see if I'm kind of blowing things out of proportion, what your thoughts are on his play action pass.
Yeah, Kevin, thanks for the call, man. Number one, I think my problem with play action, and this is not really to your point, but I'm going to use it to bring up mine. Don't worry, we're going to get to yours though. I don't know if he's necessarily lazy on the play action. I wonder, though, and I remember this from a few years ago. I hope I remember this correctly, but maybe it was last year where Allen didn't love play action passes. He didn't like turning his back to the defense, and so they went away from it. Josh, do you remember this at all? Or
kind of, yeah. And I wonder, too, how much that has to do with last year was kind of a newer offensive line, and this year is, too. So
yeah.
is that something that
but,
plays into
but
it?
But I do remember like he didn't like doing play action, so they went away from it, and they've stayed away from it. Like mm-hmm. up to this point this year, they're 31st in play action rate on passes where wide receivers are lined up wide. Yet they're one of the best play action teams in football.
Right.
So to me, it's nuts that they've gone away from it. Maybe it is due to who they have at outside wide receiver. You know, really it's Keon and maybe Mac Hollins and
– yeah. MBS?
And maybe MBS. It's not a good group. I think there is something to it. If Allen really doesn't like play action, there could be something to it of where he's just...
I mean, I think it also can go back to look at what he did in Wyoming. I mean, you can go back as far as...
Could also be his left hand, though, as well. Honestly. Like,
yeah, but last year it wasn't his left hand.
No, but I don't know necessarily if he's been lazy, but if it's something that Kevin's been seeing, it could also be to the left hand because his handoffs, especially later in the games... I don't necessarily know about Houston.
His fingers weren't taped this
week,
though.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Houston game might be a little different. But he's had like a weirder handoff, so it may have kind of taken over on the play action, too.
At least for this year.
Yeah, at least for the first few games this year. But you're right, his fingers were no longer taped, which, as anyone has broken their hand, kind of...
Good news.
It's pretty good news. It's usually towards the end of your recovery.
I just think, though, that like... That's one of those things where it's like, man, you just got to work through that. You got to try to find a way to get over that... You know, fear of turning yourself away from the defense, trust in your offensive line. Because for the most part this season, they've been very good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously in the Ravens game, they didn't look very good at all. But
no.
That's partially due to the fact
even the Houston game.
Yeah, but they weren't as bad as the Ravens game.
No, but I think the pressure rates went up from like the first 3 weeks, they were letting up, I think, less than like 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And like the last two games, paraphrasing here, but I think it's like up to like 45% each. And it was like, oh, man, like what is going on there?
That's a big jump. But it could also be partly due to the opponent. So I look at it and it's like, you know, if you have an opponent where you know you can block them better, run play action. Josh will feel more comfortable. Right.
And, I mean, I wish they ran play action way more.
And even just like the pre-snap motion, not even like the fake handoffs, just having receivers in motion through that first few weeks looked unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
And why would you get away from that?
Yep. It just made no sense to me. Matt, Mike, we'll get you here on the other side. Zach Jones and Josh Mitt here for another hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I try to watch to see if I see any interactions on the sideline or anything. Not that I see a guy walking right past another guy. I can't imagine that now. I remember those days because I had those days, and it's because I didn't trust the guy and I didn't like the guy. I didn't think he knew what he was doing. And if you read my body language back in those days with those teams that I was on, you could tell that I was pissed off. And when I see Aaron Rodgers on the sideline and I see him after the game in the post-game press conference, there is a major issue there, and both will deny it. I guarantee it, but there is an issue there because you have this 40-year-old Hall of Fame quarterback to be dealing with a coach that I think he doesn't respect.
It was Boomer Esiason. I think that was from about a week or so ago, talking about the relationship between Robert Saleh and Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers.
Hey, don't hug me.
Yeah, don't get up in my
don't
space.
You touch me. Yeah, that's basically what happened between Rodgers and Saleh. If you haven't seen the clip,
and this is what I mean, I tweeted it a few minutes ago. I want Saleh to do a tell-all.
Yes, that would that's be all so I
want.
Good.
That's all I want.
Cancel Hard Knocks next offseason. Just have Robert Saleh
get Netflix on the horn.
Ooh,
Love Is Blind season 7 is out right now. A little strange. Get Netflix on the horn.
All of the former,
let's go.
All of the former Rodgers coaches should do a little sit down.
That'd be weird. Him. I don't know.
Talk about how bad Aaron Rodgers was.
No, then it's going to be like something where like every now and then you get like Nathaniel Hackett in there where he's like, actually, like I see him like a brother.
Yeah,
and
then you get McCarthy. The contrast.
Yeah, then you get McCarthy and you're like, I hated the man. He won me a Super Bowl and I hated the man.
Who was his coach in college?
I was in Cal. Barely counts.
Well, that's true.
They're now in the ACC. Although they're good in the ACC and they did very, very good for College game day, great night game, probably should have beaten Miami. I'll give credit to Cal there. But at the time when Rodgers was there, it barely counted.
Jeff Tedford.
You made that up.
Nope, real guy.
Nope.
He actually was named Pac-10 Coach of the Year twice. And he also holds the Cal program record for most wins, games coached, and bowl victories.
Good for him. He won a dead conference twice.
And this is back when it was called the Pac-10, not the Pac-12.
When it was elite.
That's the important note there is
it was the Pac-10 for like ever.
Man, forever. Washington, this I'm just looking at the 2004 season, they went 1-10, 0-8 in the conference.
There we go.
That's a season right there.
Gotta love it.
That looks like my College Football 25 franchises.
I don't know how you do that. I will take a team where
video games.
At worst, we're going 8-5.
Video games where you have to simulate sports, it never goes well for me. I could have the best team in the league, in no matter what sport. I could have 95s all over the roster, and I would still lose to the worst team, just because of a simulation.
Gotta hate that.
It's cool. It's great.
Real quick, hockey update as well. We did hear from Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff earlier today with Jeremy and Joe, but our own Paul Hamilton, just about a minute ago, is tweeting out that Paterka, Benson, and Abbe Kubel are not practicing today. Kubel, obviously, on IR. Benson, it seemed like, was a little bit further away. Paterka, though, still, you know, possibility he could play on Thursday.
That's what Lindy said this morning. He said he would skate away from the team, so that explains why he's not at practice.
Yep. He's getting away from the team. All right, back to football and your calls. Again, 803-0550, the number to call. Again, the big news from today, Robert Saleh has been fired as Jets head coach just 5 games into year 4 as Jets head coach. It sounds like from a lot of these Jets reporters, namely Connor Hughes, SNY, seems like a stunning move. I also kind of agree, but also not. For me, at least, it seems to be more the timing rather than the actual firing. I think this could have happened last year if Salah or if Rodgers just hadn't gotten hurt. But let's get back to your phone calls. 803-0550, again, the number to call. Let's go to Mike here on the line. Mike, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well.
I got two names for you. One is a potential coaching hire, Pete Carmichael. He was the offensive coordinator for the Saints for actually 15 years, familiar with Joe Brady. He's currently a defensive assistant on the Broncos. I'm wondering what the rules are, whether we could hire him. And then the second name is a potential trade, Jalen Hyatt from the New York Giants. You know, you got Joe Shane over there, Brian Daboll, got some familiarity. He's a receiver with deep threat. Maybe we could do a player trade with Taylor Elam or some sort of draft pick to help our team out. What do you think?
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. In terms of the Carmichael thing, no, I'm good. He was in New Orleans forever. Mm-hmm. I don't think they can hire another guy from a different team in season. It has to be after the season, so I think that's kibosh anyways. Also, again, they're not firing McDermott, and they're certainly not going to bring in Pete Carmichael to do so. He was in New Orleans from 2009 to 2023, and
we saw how that team was.
They do nothing modern. They did nothing modern. That was the big thing with Clint Kubiak. Now, their offensive line, New Orleans' offensive line, has gotten demolished. And you're
now
also,
Derek Carr's hurt, potentially.
Man, that pick he threw last night, real quick on that, the one where he's like going on his back foot and just like throws it up there to no one in particular.
Right, yeah.
I'm watching it with my dad, and we're both just sitting there like, what?
That's the Derek Carr we know and love.
What are we doing here?
and he also targets Chris Olave once.
Don't even get me started on that.
Sorry. Had to.
Now, in terms of Jalen Hyatt, though, that is a former Biletnikoff Award winner.
So,
and he's doing nothing.
I was about to say, Jalen Hyatt last year, rookie season with Daniel Jones.
Kind of nothing still,
but you're with Daniel Jones. Seven starts. 40 targets, 23 receptions, 373 yards, no touchdowns. This year, started two games, has three targets and no catches.
Oh, he has been targeted, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Three of them.
Okay.
Interesting.
I didn't realize he had gotten targeted yet. I thought it was literally a nothing burger
right
for him.
So, the idea of Jalen Hyatt is the right direction of what he is or could be or was or whatever you want to look at him, because he's not doing anything this year. But when he was drafted, kind of, I don't know what you would call him, because it was one of those where it felt kind of almost like a Khalil Shakir pick, where it's like, yeah, he could be good, but he also could be nothing. That's kind of why you drafted him later in the draft.
Yeah, I liked Hyatt. I mean, they get him in round three.
Oh, he was. Oh, I didn't realize he was that high. I thought he was
for me,
fifth or sixth.
No, for me though, really, why he wasn't at the top at number one. For sort of a deep ball guy, it's not like he had that breakaway speed. Stuff. Yeah, Worthy's a record breaker, but he wasn't even close really there. Ran a 4.4 at the combine, and he kind of got good kind of out of nowhere in his last season. He went from just over 500 yards and 41 catches through 2 years, and then in 2022, boom, 67 catches, over 1,200 yards and 15 touchdowns. He was very limited in what he could do, but in terms of what the Bills actually need, if you could trade like a sixth-round pick, you got two of them, and bring him in, I don't actually hate that, because he'd be cost-effective, and he does do something that you need, which is stretch the field.
Right, but the only problem there, though, is I feel like with that specific player, with Jalen Hyatt, I feel like he's more of a decoy in a way. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that teams would go out and just get a player to just run routes and do nothing, but like you just said, he doesn't really have that breakaway speed, so can he create separation, which we've seen Bills players not really be able to do at times this year? And I just wonder, is that caliber of that kind of player what you're looking for?
No, I don't think so.
Right. So I feel it'd be a very small Band-Aid on a very large cut.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you're taking a Hello Kitty Band-Aid and putting it over a open wound that needs stitches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not going to work. But at the same time, if you're desperate and it's a cheap, cost-effective move, why not give it a shot? I mean, what'd you say? You ran a 4.4?
Yep.
It's not great. He's behind Marvin Mims.
I mean, and to be fair, the Bills really can't use guys that have speed anyways. Curtis Samuel.
True, right.
I mean, that's frustrating mess.
Trey Palmer ran a 4.3.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
I don't know. I'm just looking through, like,
I'm back now to thinking about the Curtis Samuel thing, man. They're paying $8 million a year to a guy who's got, what, 9 catches for under 50 yards so far?
Right.
Man, what are they doing with him?
And I think the other he's not running down the field. That's what they're doing. He's not going down the field. And
I mean, he was never really a field-stretching guy, but he's always a solid wide receiver. Mike Schoaf brought this up a lot, and I think it's right. It's just you got 6 slot guys.
Mm-hmm.
There's no differentiating between any of them.
Right, and if you're another team scheming for the Bills on defense, you're looking down the list of names and go, well, okay, Keon Coleman, he can be a down-the-field threat. We got to watch out for him. And everyone else is right over the middle and is a slot receiver. Cool. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So double-team or triple-team Keon Coleman and, you know.
You kind of saw it in week one, too.
Limit the rest.
You saw it in week one against Arizona. Basically, no defense for any other receivers except Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw a few of those plays where he's triple, quadruple covered. It was just like, no, like literally go to anyone else.
The problem is there, though, is – it, or well, not the problem. The thing there was that, you know, hey, Dalton Kincaid is double, triple, quadruple covered. Okay, let's just dump it off to everybody else and move down the field slowly. That works. But after these first, I mean, that was the first week where you really just got locked up. Against Miami, you never really had the problem of like your target guy getting crazy cover.
Mm-hmm.
And same with Jacksonville. But then the same thing kind of happens against Baltimore and Houston, where it's, well, the target guy is locked up. What are we going to do? Oh, we can pass it short and you know, work up the field slowly. No, let's not do that.
Yeah.
Let's still try to stretch the field and pass it to the guy that's in double coverage, who happens to be Mack Hollins.
I just have so...
Like, that's the thing. It's like, you can't...
12 targets, 3 catches over the last 2 games
for
Mack Hollins.
You can't sit here tell me that...
It is horrific.
You see him double covered, and you try to throw the ball to him. He's not that kind of player.
He can't track a deep ball. Yeah, he's never been that kind of guy. And I don't want to just say it's the wide receivers. You also have a quarterback in Josh Allen. We talked about it before the season started. He's not a particularly good deep ball thrower.
Right.
And then you've got him throwing to a guy who seemingly can't track a deep ball. Realistically, is not a guy like Nico Collins. He had a big-time catch before he went out. Literally, the play that ultimately caused him to leave the game with a hamstring injury is that touchdown.
Yeah.
Or even a guy like, well... All right, I'm going to start throwing out like big name receivers here, I guess. But like, you know, Justin Jefferson or even, you know, Stephon Diggs when he was first here, where Allen could just chuck it up and they were just, they knew exactly where they needed to be. They read the ball perfectly. They read it in the air perfectly and they came down with it.
Well, I mean,
but
look at
Allen
the,
before Diggs and now after Diggs is a bad deep ball thrower.
Look at the Keon Coleman touchdown. Yes, it's a 49-yard touchdown.
It was a 10-yard route.
Right.
Maybe. I think I'm being nice there.
And think back to the Gabe Davis 98-yard touchdown. It was, what, a 25-yard pass?
I mean, it was a deep ball pass. I actually should have thrown Gabe Davis in there. Davis could track a deep ball.
Right.
Well, Davis could really track a deep ball.
He could, but could Allen always hit him? No.
No.
And that's the thing is you have these receivers that can make these catches and track these balls, but a large part of the time, all these deep touchdowns, these long touchdowns, are mostly because of the receivers creating that play.
Yeah,
that's the thing now is you don't have a receiver that can create that play.
Yeah, and to this point though, Michael tweeted into me a little while ago. The deep shot to Hollins, the first deep shot to Hollins, hit his fingertips. Do players not dive anymore? If he dives, he catches that. I don't love that. Two things on that. One, he is wide open. Allen, it is pitch and catch.
Right, just toss it.
Hollins got to track that better because he looked confused. And three, diving is not like a for sure catch thing. They're now diving out to catch a ball in which very good chance, very realistic chance, that ball is going to hit the ground and they will not actually catch it.
Or you're going to catch it, and as you're trying to pull it in, bounce the ball off the turf out of your hands.
Yeah, like it's also
it's not like you're in the air.
It's not a foolproof thing, and I think that's why guys don't dive for balls. It's not a foolproof thing. If anything, you're taking yourself out of the play, but giving a little more effort.
It looks better. The eye test looks better. But other than that, it's really not a statistical advantage. Now, it's different in when you're laying out for like a baseball, you have a glove. Like, there's, you know, and that's, I think, part of the thing is where people might get that idea from is, hey, look, that guy laid out, got dirty, made a crazy out. Yeah, well, it's a different sport.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Mark on the line. Mark, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Just in reference to the Robert Saleh, Aaron Rodgers ordeal with the Jets, I mean, how many more games does Josh or does Sean McDermott have to cost Josh Allen for this to be an issue here in Buffalo? I mean, it's every big game that we have where McDermott can't seal the deal. It's something that he does that affects the outcome of this game. And if I'm Josh Allen, I mean, I just, it's almost like, I love comparing, who is it? The Warriors coach who drafted all those guys.
Steve Kerr.
For the NBA. And then they bring in Steve Kerr, right? I just feel like we are lacking that. And I love McDermott. And it stinks because I want to win. I never wanted to win with a coach so bad. Everything he's done to this community, the character that, you know, we don't know these guys personally, but everything on paper is unbelievable. But something's got to give. And I think if I'm Josh Allen, I'm kind of getting fed up. I just went 9-33 and against a good team. We blow out these small teams, and I think that's the outlier, right? You have Josh Allen. You should not be – Bill Belichick, he didn't really have to do much with Tom Brady, right? All these guys, like you guys referenced Mike Shanahan. He had John Elway. Well, Sean McDermott has the second-best quarterback in the league until last week. I'm just fired up about it. I want McDermott's seat to be hotter. I'm going to have to listen. Thanks, boys.
Thanks for the call, Mark.
I don't think you can compare Saleh and Rodgers to Allen and McDermott at all because Allen is a much better person than Aaron Rodgers. I mean, they're completely different in terms of how they act in the public eye, and they're also, they're different people.
And I don't know how much Allen and McDermott ultimately interact.
That's true too. Mike brought that up
on yesterday, and she's like how much do they? I don't know. I don't know how much they interact. I will say though, Mark, I kind of understand your point, but like if I'm Allen and I'm getting mad at the head coach because I went 9-for-30, it was not 9-for-33, it was 9-for-30. I don't know, man. Look at yourself in the mirror. Hit a throw.
Yeah,
he was 30 completion percentage, something like that. It's one of the worst stat lines ever. I don't know, man. Look at yourself in the mirror. We've been talking about it. He can't hit a deep ball.
Mm-hmm.
He had guys wide open, and there were not very many of those.
And I still
they were bad.
Yeah, and I still look back too to that last drive, the three throws,
if that's McDermott,
I don't think that's McDermott. I really don't. I think that was. Josh, go out there and do your thing and see what happens. But that's
the first play to Hollins, though.
Mm-hmm.
That looked like that was the design to go to Hollins deep, yeah. What have you.
Yeah.
That could be on McDermott. Sure. Allen's not complaining about that.
No.
He's the quarterback. He's going to like being aggressive.
And he's going to like being able to be like, hey, this is my job.
And this is your time. Go win it.
Right.
I just. Look, there's a lot I'm going to put on McDermott. I think, yeah, the late game decisions. I think, though, it's got to be on McDermott, though. There's no way he's letting the quarterback and the OC decide that. Like, that's on him.
Well,
I don't love, though, that yesterday when they're speaking with the media, is both McDermott and Brady had very different kind of feelings on what happened. McDermott was much more apologetic and what have you. Brady seemed to be more, I could be very much misremembering this. I want to listen to that again, but very much more like, we need to execute better.
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
But at the same time, executing better in that specific situation would have been running the ball, not, well, we should have passed the ball better. You have 20 seconds left. You're tied. Maybe not 20.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember now. But
It was tied. 20-20.
No, how much time was left on the clock. But just run the ball, or at least look like you're going to, because there was no one in the backfield. You know, you didn't even like – attempt to look like you're running the ball. And
there was 32 seconds
32.
When he throws that incomplete pass to Keon Coleman, which ultimately was almost a pick.
Right. Yeah, if Coleman doesn't
it was a poorly thrown
if
ball.
If Coleman doesn't have pass interference there, I think that might get picked off. And then the third throw to Samuel looked like it was going to work, but you skip it.
Well, yeah, he was hit as he threw. So
yeah, that's true.
But for me, just real quick on that, we don't want to spend too much time again. We're past the 24 hours. We're on to the Jets. They fired their head coach, in case you didn't hear. Robert Saleh's fired.
Woohoo!
For me, though, it was more just after the first pass really did not go well. You almost threw a pick. Keon Coleman has to commit pass interference to not have an interception be thrown there.
I thought the Hollins pass was first.
No, it was Coleman first, then Hollins.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm misremembering.
And that's why it's my problem of you then went to a play that looked like the play was to go to Hollins deep. There was no change in anything they were doing. They, with zero timeouts, basically looked like they were trying to commit 13 seconds. You had no timeouts. Your wide receivers haven't gotten open all day. and your quarterback at the time of the drive starting was 9 for 27. I don't know. Maybe reevaluate after that quarterback almost throws a pick on the first pass of that drive. And try to run it, force a timeout, get a little bit out of the end zone. Now, at that point, you're probably not getting a first down. You'd have to get a big run from Cook, and you're probably not. But you at least give the punter more room where in the end zone, he can't do his normal step. He has to get it, boot it. He can't do the normal buildup to actually punt it to push it further down. And even then, it was a pretty solid punt. They still had to have the good return. They still had to run a play after that. But if you can at least get them through their timeouts, they can't throw to the middle of the field. They have to go to the boundaries. They have to go to the sidelines.
Even if you just burn one timeout.
And that is on McDermott. Man, there's bad clock management everywhere in the NFL. Well, in the same game, D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Right. And even before that, too, when the Bills use all of their timeouts in the fourth quarter, I mean, what was that? You know, if you don't use all the timeouts and you're still trying to like throw the ball and stuff, then I kind of understand it. You have, you know, potential to get down the field, call a timeout and keep moving. But earlier in the game, you use all your timeouts well before you even need to. And I don't know. Obviously, like you said, it's past 24 hours. It's still
the end game by both teams just had me mind boggled. Like, right. If I'm a Houston fan, I'm leaving that game incredibly frustrated for two reasons. One, we look like garbage for five straight weeks now. We're 4-1, yes, but we do not look like a team that's going to actually win a Super Bowl. And two, the main guy on our offense, the real game breaker, hurt with a hamstring, is week to week.
Yeah. And three.
Like, you won the game, but at what cost kind of deal?
The game management, obviously. And like, that goes into, you know, not looking good. But
yeah,
that would be a big deal if I'm a Houston fan.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Matt on the line. Matt, how are we doing today?
Hey guys, I have to disagree with a couple points. I know everyone wants to bury McDermott about the end of the game thing.
Matt, do we still have you?
I'm not forcing a 10-second runoff. And when they got the intentional grounding, he could have forced a 10-second runoff. But he chose not to. So that is a mistake on his part, because that would have took 10 seconds off the clock. But you got to think of it this way. They were trying to run the ball the entire second half, and they basically got stuffed pretty much all second half for maybe like one run. So you got to think that Houston's expecting them to run down there. They're not probably going to get much of anything. And if you run the ball down there, sure, you make them burn the timeouts, but the plays are also a lot quicker than a pass play. You're giving them an extra 10 seconds when you punt the ball. So, yeah, you made them burn three timeouts, but now instead of being 12 seconds, they have 22 seconds. So they still could have ran a play and spiked the ball in the middle of the field. Same result. Not people aren't thinking about that a pass play is much longer than a run play.
Well, yeah, but Matt, to this argument, we're saying that either pass three times or run three times. I'm just saying don't pass it three times. That ultimately you moved nowhere. You didn't kill all that much time. They still had all their timeouts.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter outside of them getting a first down. They needed to get a first down. That was the end result. However they did it, needed a first down.
Yeah, and they weren't going for first downs.
It wouldn't have made any difference.
Yeah, they weren't going for first downs. Thanks for the call, Matt. They weren't going for a first down. They were going for kill shots. They went deep to Coleman, and the next play went deep to Hollins. They were not going for a first down.
They don't even have to go for a first down. Realistically,
I don't disagree with that point. They did.
I think you burn all the
timeouts, and then you go to overtime.
I think if you have three short runs that don't result in a first down. One, you're out of your end zone. Two, you burn all three of their timeouts. Three, your punter has more room to work with, and you can get the ball further. That's why you don't even have to go for a first down. Sure, if you get one, it's nice, but you don't have to because you don't have you don't have timeouts. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
But that's been my frustration. I agree on the first point, though. Probably should have taken the 10-second runoff. However,
yes,
as you saw how they played the rest of it, they had no desire to do that. They were going to go for kill shots. They wanted to try to do 13 seconds to Houston, and I cannot for the life of me understand why. This was not the 13 seconds game where Allen and Mahomes were both on fire and were just torching defenses. This is a game where, starting that drive, you were 9 for 27, and you threw two deep balls in a row, one of which, the first one, was almost intercepted. The second one is to Mac Hollins, who does nothing to fight for the ball. It's just, to me, the whole thing looked broken. It didn't look like there was really much of a plan. It felt like the team thought they had way more time and a timeout to be doing so. I did not understand it at all. Let's go back to the phones here before our next time out. We've got Marvin on the line. Marvin, how are we doing today?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm listening now, and everybody thinks old Marvin's a salty guy. Well, I am, but I speak from and I love the Bills. But at the end of the day, there are so many things that I've said and called in, and they're coming to fruition. And it's not because it's just the way McDermott coaches. I there's a few things I just want to bring up. At the end of the game, they're trying to get extra yards. Did you see the defense he had us in? He's a defensive coach. He had our safeties in the end zone. They're just trying to get enough yards to get a field goal. The guy is bizarre. I mean, Trubisky comes in. I'm yelling at my buddies, call a timeout. And they put him in. You knew what he was going to hand the ball off. I mean, it's just – it's so sad. It's so sad. He's not a good coach. He is not a good coach. He craps himself at the improper two times. And the UB kids that they have, it's a nice story. But every time I look, the UB products, they just like Brown, no speed whatsoever. No speed at all. It's we're in for a long season, guys. I hate to say it. We're in for a long season. And I feel bad for Josh Allen. But everything you guys and people are calling in, Josh Allen could never throw a good long ball. You know, he's a great quarterback. I love the guy. Brown is going to tackle Spencer Brown's going to get him killed still. That guy's got cinder blocks for feet. But it's just at the end of the day, guys, everybody that's calling in is fortifying everything that I've said to you guys. And, you know, they think that, oh, Marvin's a salty guy. Well, I am a little bit, but I shoot from the hip. And it's nice to hear people, unfortunately, say the things I've been saying for a long time. Samuel is the biggest. Those plays they did with Samuel off the line of scrimmage, six plays, got nothing. Are they trying to justify the $8 million? I don't know. But your comments, guys, I love listening to you. And it makes my day to hear you guys. Talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Marvin. I disagree on saying McDermott's not a good coach. There's no statistical proof to that. He wins a playoff game almost every year. They've made the playoffs, what is it now, six straight years?
Mm-hmm.
To me, and this is sports, so it's not just football or even here or whatever, too much do we go, they're terrible or they're great. There is a middle ground there, and I would have McDermott in around the middle ground. I'd have him as a top 10 coach in the NFL because most coaches in the NFL are kind of garbage. They're not great. They're just not. You have the greats. Matt LaFleur, I think, is amazing. Kevin O'Connell's awesome. Sean McVay, great. But even Bill Belichick, who was great, kind of teetered off a little bit. I think McDermott is still a good coach. He's not great. He has his issues. But that defense is constantly ready to go. And to Marvin's point, the UB guys are a great story, but every time I see them, no, because for the first half of the year, they were great. They were injured to hell, and it didn't matter. Their defense was swarming them. They kind of still were against Houston. It's a bad miscommunication for Cole, and we'll see, we'll never see what would have happened if Nico Collins is able to stay in the game. But ultimately, it's a bad miscommunication by rookie safety. Outside of that, though, Houston scores 23 points. They score 3 points in the second half. And C.J. Stroud still threw for 300 yards, but they scored 3 points in the second half. Now, I will say, though, to Marvin's point on the end of the game where the safeties are like way in the back and like they're almost off the screen. I saw that like an hour or two after the game, they put up the little spots where, you know, you can see the dots going and you just see the safeties just
drift off,
flying away.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Right.
That's insane. But
that looks like 13 seconds.
It looked like you were terrified that they were going to all of a sudden audible and go, we're going to take, they're never going to do that.
No,
they were never going to do that. They were just going to run it, kick a field goal, get out of there. And then the Trubisky thing with the timeout. What? He has to go in for a play.
He has to. He literally, even if they take a timeout, Allen can't come back in.
He has to run a play.
For a play, yeah. That was always going to be happening.
And even then, most concussion protocols don't take as short as they did. Not going to say too much on that, but they don't typically take that little of time. 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt, you're listening to the X Point Show on WGR.
You know, that's on me. The end of game situation on offense, we're in a tough situation. They're holding three timeouts. I got a good field goal kicker. We needed to run the clock and move the chains, and that's on me. We didn't do that there, and that's my fault.
That was Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott there. A little bit of an update on the Robert Saleh situation. Jordan Schultz, Bleacher Report. Robert Saleh's relationship with Aaron Rodgers was not fractured. Despite speculation, according to multiple sources, the two were getting along. The firing of Robert Saleh was carried out solely by owner Woody Johnson this morning. And from a number of reports, including Connor Hughes of SNY, comes as quite a surprise to basically everyone in the building. And then now Diane Rossini of The Athletic? I believe she is. Yes, she is. She is reporting now that it is my understanding that the Jets do not plan on firing offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, which, too, I would say that is a decision.
Yeah.
The defense has been really good. The defense is keeping them in games.
No, but we're also going to see now, is the defense large part of Robert Saleh, or is it Jeff Ulbrich?
Yes.
Jeff, right?
Ulbrich.
Yep. Ulbrich, okay. You're going to find out who is the real mastermind there. And it might be a brain trust sort of thing, but I also feel like Saleh was a big part of that defense.
Their Jets' defensive rankings this season. Points per game, 17. That is tied for fifth. Passing yards per game, 136.6. That is second. Yards per play, 4.3. First. Passing touchdown rate, 1.4%. That is third in the league. Sack rate, 11%. That is second.
Man.
You better hope it's not him.
If that's...
Because he's doing exactly what he needs to, but you were sort of forced to hire Nathaniel Hackett, who his offense has looked exactly like everyone assumed it would.
Yeah, it's looked like it has for the past
Saleh
5 years.
Saleh is going to walk into a defensive coordinator position, mm-hmm. do exceptionally well at it, and then in 3 years, I'd say, probably as a head coach again. Because I initially, to start the show, I was wondering how many teams will look at him and go, man, you were just a guy though there. Like, you weren't really the head coach once Rodgers got there. I wonder if a lot of teams go, yeah, dude, that sucked. I'm sorry, man. It's gonna be better here.
This is like it's like a hazing thing. Like, you have to go through it, and
apparently,
now,
yeah.
Everyone's gotta deal with Aaron Rodgers. Not really, but
in
this scenario it feels like it.
Part of me does feel bad for him, because it felt like the Zach Wilson thing did not work right away. It felt like the Jets zeroed in on him way, way, way too fast. And to be fair, I mean, man, if they just don't win a game against L.A., they do have Trevor Lawrence. You wonder what would have happened there if Lawrence doesn't have, you know, Urban Meyer's first year and kind mm-hmm. of what's developed there. But I don't know. A lot of what-ifs there, but I think Saleh is going to be a head coach soonish. I want to say soonish, but he's absolutely going to be a defensive coordinator and will probably be a very good one moving forward. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Hunter on the line. Hunter, how are we doing today?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
Hey. I think it's pretty obvious that that your fan base, the Bills fan base here, is fed up with McDermott. I've been listening to the radio the past 2 days. A lot of the callers, guys, can't get over the decision-making from this guy, okay? And not a knock on you guys. You know, I love you guys. I love what you guys do for the Bills. But I think the fans are getting sick and tired of not only hearing you guys, but a lot of these analysts defending Sean McDermott, okay? He has been a terrible decision maker. Everyone talks about 13 seconds. Yes, we have to move on from that, unfortunately. Okay,
unfortunately.
But yet that game the other day was watching what the Bills did there with 30 seconds left on the clock. Okay, I don't understand how this guy can continue to be a head coach of this team. I don't get it. There's this guy named Bill Belichick sitting at home right now with his 24-year-old girlfriend, probably itching to coach this team. If we had Bill Belichick as the head coach of this team, I guarantee you, we win that 13 seconds game, the Bills win a Super Bowl, we have to do something. This cannot continue. This cannot continue. Joe Brady.
Hunter, real quick on the Belichick thing, real quick. Why was he not hired? Yeah. Why did he have one interview with the team then this year? If he is so good still, why did he have one interview and not get hired?
Good question. But if you give Bill Belichick Josh Allen, watch out, okay? Look at what that man did all those years with
Okay, Hunter, thanks for the call. A way to not answer it. Because he's not really a good coach anymore. He is solid. He's exactly where McDermott is.
Like you said earlier, the game has passed him by.
He is exactly where McDermott is, about a 10 to 15, top 10 to 15 coach.
Yeah.
I don't disagree, and I agree. I believe me, I take the calls. I screen them for half the day. I know the fan base is frustrated. I will also tell you, look at when these coaches who have made the playoffs regularly get fired. It's after finally missing the playoffs. That is the name of the game. Fans, it's win a Super Bowl. For teams, it's to get a shot at the dance. That is always what it's about. one team out of 32 wins the Super Bowl. And since McDermott has been head coach, or let's more go to since Allen's been quarterback, three guys have won the Super Bowl. Brady, 1 year with Stafford, and Mahomes. That's it. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens have been the one seed twice. They've won a single playoff game with that. Burrow has made the Super Bowl and almost won it. He went to two straight AFC Championship games. Now his team's 1-4, and he's basically doing everything. He's got, what, 9 touchdown passes over the last 2 weeks? Maybe 9 or 8 touchdown passes over the last 2 weeks in one pick. His team's 0-2. I mean, he's doing everything, and his team is 1-4. And this, I guarantee, you can't. It's the same with if they traded for Davante Adams. I guarantee they're going to be. No, they're not. They're almost probably not going to. It's not how the league works. Belichick comes in. Guess what? Still a defensive guy. Joe Brady's still probably their offensive coordinator. And that's kind of where a lot of their issues are. Ken Dorsey's their offensive coordinator. Kind of where a lot of their issues are. The defense has been good. It gets hurt. Is his late game decision-making at times terrible? Absolutely. Absolutely. So is most of the league. Kyle Shanahan is an offensive wizard who, I mean, this year he's dealing with a lot of injuries. But most years, if he makes the playoffs, they make the NFC Championship game, if not make the Super Bowl. And yet, as both a coordinator and as a head coach, he gets to the Super Bowl and dies immediately.
Yeah,
he takes a lead, and they just absolutely fumble it away. It is astounding what Shanahan has been able to do. Sean McVay makes his first Super Bowl. They score, what, 3 points? And with this vaunted offense that they were, 3 points? You know, it's a lot of luck that plays into it. Sure, you got to make your own luck. But I feel like this grandiose of they need to fire him now, this would be unprecedented if they fired McDermott. I think even to the national media that is saying it, it would be nearly unprecedented.
Mm-hmm. They're more so saying it, I feel like, at this point, a off-season type thing of you have to find...
Yeah, if you want to move off the off-season, I get it. It's right. Fine. It still would be unprecedented. They're mm-hmm. probably going to make the playoffs this year. This division is awful. The AFC East is bad. And he would have made the playoffs. What would that be? 7 straight years? 6 straight years?
6.
6 straight years. And then to be fired, that takes a lot. I think that would also take someone like Josh Allen saying he was done, which I can't see that happening.
No, and I also think, too, like...
Let's be fair. Where our topic was going to go today was free agent acquisitions. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of heat's got to be more on Brandon Bean.
Yeah.
Of missing draft picks, of missing free agent acquisitions.
And I think, too, you can look at... A lot of the conversation, I feel like, in a few years, will be shifted to, why did the Bills let Brian Daboll walk? Why did the Bills not try to find a way to keep Brian Daboll in the building?
And I hope that's not, because it's not a realistic conversation.
Really? You don't think so? Because I think...
You want to be head coach.
Right. But I think you're starting to get to the point where it's like, okay, what if you replace McDermott with Daboll?
Unprecedented. Unprecedented. That's never happened. I understand that, but look at
what he's doing with Daniel Jones.
He's made the playoffs once.
Right, but he's doing it with one of the worst quarterbacks in the league.
He made the playoffs one time, and then last year they were a disaster.
This year, they're not looking like a disaster.
They look okay. They look better.
They look better than last year.
They're still probably not going to make the playoffs in the NFC. So he'll be one playoff year over two. And what many, and this is not the first time I've heard it, but what many people want to see is a literally unprecedented thing.
Mm-hmm.
You would have gone from 13 seconds, which that's fair. After 13 seconds, I think many could have argued he should have been fired.
Yeah.
But then to see him fired and Daboll elevated, it still would have been, oh man, that is stunning.
Right. And I do understand the gravity of that. But at the same time, I look at what Daboll was able to do with this team and this offense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard. And again, we might be looking at this with rose-colored glasses. It's hard to look back at that and think, man, there was times where that was just not working. That was really bad. And there probably were in the very beginning. But it's hard to look back at the end of Daboll's tenure with the Bills and say, you know, yeah, I think it's okay that we moved off of him. Like, it never will be. But I get what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the offense hasn't felt right since he left. And that's just...
No, it hasn't. And I think
that's the problem.
They've botched the coordinator picks. We brought up in the first hour, real quick, got to take a time out here. But that's where they've missed on these OC pickups is both their greatest positive and the greatest negative is this continuity. Their continuity on the offensive side of the ball has not been great. Post-Daboll. Ken Dorsey, they fire midway through the season. And Joe Brady, what is it, their 13th total ranked offense right now? It's not good enough with Josh Allen, a quarterback, even in a transition year. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Mitt here until 12 o'clock. You're listening to the X Point Show on WGR. Quick final segment here. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We have spent a lot of today getting connected to our fans. And when we do that, it is brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. It's been a good conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I think it's not great. I never like to see the Bills lose, but I always think the conversations when your favorite team loses can often be very eye-opening. They can be exciting. They can be very thought-provoking. I very much like it. I just wish it came under better circumstances. I wish every Sunday when, like, if the Bills lost, it didn't go, well, at least the conversations are going to be good. Like, I wish it could be like, nah, this sucks all the way. Hate it. And when they win, it's like, all right, it's going to be more thought-provoking. I do think, though, talking about a purely dominant team can get somewhat boring. Like, I wonder what Kansas City talks about, even now. You know, last night they looked good, but over through 4 weeks, their offense looked like garbage. But could they honestly sit there and complain? Probably not, right, John? I mean, like, they're probably sitting there going, like, we won the Super Bowl 2 years in a row with bad offense.
If you're complaining in Kansas City,
I know.
Please come here. Please.
And that's what I'm saying. So, like, it's
to sit in our shoes for a day.
So a part of it, just because this is my job, is like, okay. Like, I'll deal with it because I like the conversations.
No, I get that. And I think, I mean, to be fair, I think Kansas City's having their own worries as well. I mean,
I wonder though. I mean, they just won game two of the ALDS last night.
Oh, that's right.
They won two Super Bowls. Like, they're probably okay. They're probably just fine.
They don't know hockey team though.
They're probably fine. their baseball team won a World Series in 15. They're
all right.
They've won three Super Bowls. I feel like they're fine.
How's the soccer team going?
I don't know.
Sporting
got,
Kansas City.
They've got good barbecue, so they've also got food on. Oh, whatever. If you're a Jets fan though. Today's kind of weird. Today's weird. I feel like a lot of Jets fans sort of felt like if the season got up to a rocky start, Robert Saleh's position would be in jeopardy. I'm seeing a lot of reports, too, from other New York reporters as well. It seemed like there was feelings that Nathaniel Hackett and his position was maybe up in the air. But now this morning has kind of made you think that's not really true anymore. They're not going to make multiple firings, especially when the head coach goes first. You know, a lot of it, too, sounding like, you know, no one really knew. And this was quite stunning. Just, I joke that this seemed like, you know, to have Rodgers' fingerprints on it. Maybe this really was just Woody Johnson waking up this morning. Because every report I'm reading now from like SNY and NBC and ESPN is like, Saleh walked in today thinking he had a job.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if Woody Johnson, yeah, like, watched the London game and went, nope, I'm done. And that was it. I mean, just, even though their defense has been great, and it's the offense that's the problem.
Yeah.
Then that's the thing, too. If they think this is going to now all of a sudden fix the offense, they're going to be just as bad. And you brought up in the last segment, we'll see if their defense is really all Robert Saleh or their interim head coach, Jeff Ulbrich. We'll see. But I think he's one of the best defensive minds in football, and I think they are going to miss him on that front. I don't necessarily know how he is as head coach.
I found Kansas City's Achilles heel.
Here we go.
It's the soccer team.
Oh, not good?
This season, 8-18-7. There it is.
Well, there you go. Now they've got something to complain about. Now they're human like the rest of us. Thanks for calling in, everyone. Thanks for listening today. Me and Josh will be back on tomorrow and Thursday as well. Thursday, of course, being the Sabres home opener. And with that being said, coming up next, Sabres Live. You're listening to WGR.